Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View, a big-time NBA draft episode. Winners and losers. Who kind of gets on the outs for their team with these new incoming rookies and what it might mean for the future of some of these teams. There are already a bunch of trades that have happened in order to offload some contracts, rebuild your roster. A lot of that is going to be happening, including today, for example, John Collins being traded from the Hawks to the Jazz. A lot of trades like that are going to be happening because you've had a bunch of teams that have, like, yes, they have their two-star players, but they have three max contracts on their roster. And with the new CBA, it's going to punish a ton of teams. Or if you are a team with, three max players on your team, then it's A, going to be super difficult for you to round out your roster, or B, you're going to go like way over the luxury tax and pay just like an absolute murdersome amount of money in fines. And no one really wants that. And then it constricts you in the salary cap in order to have roster flexibility. So the new CBA, I don't know if it kicks in this year or next year. I'm pretty sure it's this year. But there's a possibility that 2024 is the year it kicks in. But regardless, teams are like preemptively getting this out of the way. That way, when the new CBA does kick in or whenever that happens, they're able to like deal with it easily. So a bunch of pre-draft NBA trades. We'll talk about the trades first, then the actual NBA draft. But before all that, there is something I wanted to talk about. There was this Lil Uzi Vert put out this album trailer, which I think is so cool. Metro, I feel like Metro Boomin was the first one I saw that did that. But I saw that today and it was like this cool anime inspired stuff, which he's obviously a huge anime guy. So, to see like him basically make his own trailer where he's got like a sword and he's doing these crazy flips and stuff. It's really cool. So Metro started that. He had like the Heroes and Villains trailer, which was fire. And then Uzi came out with this. He has like the Pink Tape coming out on the 30th, so Friday. Very excited for that album. But it was just a cool thing that I wanted to briefly share with you guys. Let's see here. So the trades that have gone on. Marcus Smart, big time piece of the Boston Celtics core. He's been a Celtic his entire career. He has grown with that team just as much as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have. He's been there with them since the beginning. I actually think he was drafted before them. But defensive player of the year, defensive backbone of that team. He's a leader of that team in the locker room, on the court. He's hit some big shots for them over the years, and he was the one to go. So that the Celtics trying to revamp their roster a little bit. I'm going to read out the entire things for this trade. So basically, this trade involves three teams, the Wizards, the Grizzlies, and the Celtics. So the Wizards got Mike Muscala from Boston, Danilo Gallinari from Boston, which if you forgot, Danilo Gallinari was on the Celtics. Don't worry. I think I did too. He was injured for the entirety of the season, so he didn't play. But he goes to Washington, and then Tyus Jones goes from Memphis to Washington. Marcus Smart goes from Boston to the Grizzlies, and then Porzingis goes from Washington to the Celtics, and the Celtics also, I think they got two first-round draft picks for Marcus Smart in next year's draft, and then 2026, I believe it was. So they get draft compensation from Memphis. The Wizards get rid of Porzingis, and Marcus Smart goes to the Grizzlies, and then Washington gets like a bunch of role players, basically. But I don't really know what Washington's doing. They traded their two massive contracts with Beal. We talked about his trade to the Suns last week, and now Porzingis pre-draft. So Boston to me, it's weird because their problems, I feel like, are that they don't have like a real point guard, no disrespect to Marcus Smart, but a real point guard that can fluidly run their offense. Their offense is run through Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And sometimes, especially in the playoffs, you see, you saw it this year in the playoffs really badly. Their offense sometimes devolves into Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum going, okay, my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn. And then that's it. Like, no one else really gets involved. So the fact that now Porzingis is out there, he adds, obviously, incredible height and length. At the bare minimum, he's going to be a good defender. He's a block machine. He's going to be an interior rim protector. And obviously, he stretches the floor. He can shoot the three ball. So him with Robert Williams there is going to be very interesting. And it is certainly a different dynamic. I can't obviously imagine that both of them are going to be on the floor at the same time. But now you have Al Horford, who's going to be playing less minutes, which I think is good for him now that he's much older now. Putting him in spurts to go out there and hit a couple threes, I think will be very beneficial for him and the Celtics. But I just think that at the end of the day, they really do suffer a little bit from a lack of a true playmaking guard, because Tatum can playmake. He's a very good passer. Jaylen Brown, there's a little bit left to be desired there in terms of playmaking abilities, especially because when he does really try to playmate and drive and penetrate and then kick out, he tends to turn the ball over at a fairly high clip. And again, back to the playoffs, we saw it was really, really a problem with that. Tatum can playmake, but like, he's also your number one scoring option. So you don't want him to be relegated to this role of trying to get everyone else in the team involved, because that's not his play style. Like, he is not LeBron. LeBron, I've already regret saying that, because I don't want to like relegate all my, you know, sports takes back to LeBron James. That's not how it is. But like, they're the same size, like 6'8", 6'9", super athletic. They're the number one scoring option. But like, LeBron is a guy who is just a naturally gifted passer. Tatum's not on that kind of level. So it's not fair for him to be, you know, basically designated as the guy who has to make the offense run through him. Now, I think it is something that happens naturally is when, like, his shot's just not falling, because, you know, sometimes he can just be ice cold to the point where you think he never played basketball before. It doesn't happen a lot. It doesn't, but it does happen. And on those nights, he makes it a point to crash the glass hard and also basically say, hey, I'm just going to be driving and kicking and trying to get everyone involved. And then his, you know, assist numbers rack up. But just on a night-in, night-out basis, I think the Celtics would really benefit from that kind of, like, true point guard to get people involved. You know, like, honestly, like Chris Paul. So Chris Paul is on the Warriors now. That's something we are going to get to, obviously. But, like, Chris Paul at this stage of his career would be a good minimum, like, lower-level contract for a veteran. Obviously, you still have to pay him. He's on an expiring deal. So that would have been someone that I thought the Celtics could maybe go after to really help their offense and to get their offensive flow to be even better. Obviously, you can't totally count on Chris Paul because of the health stuff where he's constantly getting injured, especially in the playoffs. So that's like a red flag. And then you also have like Malcolm Brogdon, who was supposed to be part of that trade that involved the Clippers. The Clippers were supposed to be that team instead of the Grizzlies. And Malcolm Brogdon was supposed to go to the Clippers. But that deal fell apart because the Clippers did not like Malcolm Brogdon's physicals and the injuries that he had this year. So they pulled out of the deal. The Celtics still really wanted Kristaps Porzingis, so they had to find a third team. The Grizzlies were the ones that came in. They offered the pieces. They offered the draft capital. And they got Marcus Smart, who honestly fits in nicely there. Because Marcus Smart, obviously with the Celtics, has been to multiple Eastern Conference Finals, has been to the NBA Finals. Like, he has played deep playoff basketball and kind of understands what that comes with and being a team that has championship aspirations. So to take a veteran like him, also obviously an outstanding defender, and plug him into that young, inexperienced, immature core that the Grizzlies have, that's a huge plus for them to get someone like Marcus Smart. A huge plus. What was it saying? Oh, like Chris Paul. Chris Paul would have been like a nice piece, in my opinion, to have for the Celtics. But obviously they didn't go that way. It didn't turn out that way. So Marcus Smart gets to the Grizzlies, and Porzingis is on the Celtics, and the Celtics got some draft capital. And that's basically all I have to know. The Wizards got some role players, and that was the big one. The second huge trade here is Chris Paul, as mentioned, was traded from the Phoenix Suns to the Washington Wizards in that Bradley Beal trade. I said it last week, but it wasn't anything shocking or like a revelation or anything. I think everyone kind of just assumed Chris Paul was never going to play a single minute in a Wizards uniform. Not only that, I don't think they were even printing his jerseys because they knew it was never going to last, right? But in a shocking trade for the Warriors, Chris Paul gets sent from Washington to Golden State for Jordan Poole and a bunch of second-round picks, I think. Like, 3 second-round picks or whatever it was. Jordan Poole, the guy they just gave a max extension to. 1 year on the extension, and they were done with him. Now, I think this more or less points to the signs that Chris Paul is on an expiring contract. They're going to bring his veteran presence in off the bench. He's going to contribute minutes to the Warriors, who believe that they can clearly still make a deep playoff run. And in all likelihood, now that Jordan Poole is off the books, that frees up room for Draymond Green. So Green elected to become a free agent. I would imagine that his preference is to stay in Golden State just because at this point in his career, he's not a total offensive threat, but he does everything else still really well and just fits into that offense so perfectly and has basically just mastered it over the amount of years that they've been together, him, Clay, and Steph, basically. And I don't know why he would even want to entertain the idea of going anywhere else. I think personally, just from a fan of basketball perspective, Steph, Draymond, and Clay deserve to retire as Warriors together. Kind of like, it felt wrong when Tony Parker like left the Spurs. I don't know if people remember that. Tony Parker spent a year on the Charlotte Hornets and then retired. And then Manu and Tim Duncan were still on San Antonio, and then they both each retired, I think, within a year of each other. Or maybe the same year. So it's like weird. It was weird when that happened. It was very, very weird. It was like unholy, unnatural, an abomination. So that kind of, I'm not saying Draymond's, I think the threesome of Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan is better than the threesome of Clay, Steph, and Draymond. It's certainly a conversation, but I just think Tim Duncan's like a top 7 player of all time. Steph's probably top 10, I would say. Close to it, definitely. If he's not top 10, he's probably like 11 or 12, right? Now, like, Clay and Draymond Green didn't make like the NBA top 75 teams, but you know, they are still multiple-time champions with the same core, playing together forever, and yeah, that's why, right? So it is, it's interesting that this is the route that the Warriors have elected to go. So they had, obviously, a lot of max contracts. They gave Wiggins a max. They gave Poole a max. Steph, Clay are going to be getting another contract soon. Draymond's already a free agent. So they really had to like decide, are we really blowing it up or are we trying to still make this work? And I think part of the reason why Bob Myers stepped down is because this is something that needs to be done. Bob Myers was very much at the forefront of like, we are going to try and win it all every single year. No if ends or buts, like no excuses. I'm not going to like tiptoe around the money situation. Spend, spend, spend. And they did it perfectly. You know, they got everyone paid. No one was disgruntled about money. They were somehow still able to get Kevin Durant in there. And all in all, it was just like a perfectly balanced ecosystem. But now that this new CBA is in place, which basically was outlined to negate a Kevin Durant to the Warriors situation again, the Warriors have to now fiddle with their books, which is why Jordan Poole is gone. They took inventory and they decided that Jordan Poole, as talented as he is, was not a guy that they could see leading this franchise in the future. So they decided ship him off now. Don't have to deal with, you know, the contract or the money situation. Just ship him off now. Let him get some reps somewhere else. Get some playing time somewhere else. And then we're just going to deal with what we have currently. And again, I think that's a part of the reason why Bob Myers stepped down is because he didn't want to be the GM that had to make decisions about money if they did not directly contribute to winning. He was in it to win it. And now you have a situation that's coming about where you have to make sacrifices in order to save a dollar. So that's what I think that's part of the reason why he stepped down. And this is clearly, this is the first move that the Warriors make post Bob Myers. I think who is Mike Dunleavy Jr. is the GM now. So the first move that they make post Bob Myers is trade the guy he just gave an extension to after 1 year, Jordan Poole. Now, Jordan Poole, you can say a lot about Jordan Poole, specifically this year. Literally unplayable in the playoffs. Huge red flag, obviously, like crumbled under that pressure. His shooting splits, I believe, were down across the board. He actually led the NBA in free throw shooting last year, and I think he only shot like, I mean, he still shot great. He was like in the mid-80s, I think, or low 80s, which is still really good. But clearly not the same percentage that it was last year. I think his three-point percentage was down too. And a lot of those crazy shots, especially in the playoffs, in the early part of the playoffs, a lot of those big-time shots, those heat-check shots, the deep threes that were going in last year were not going in this year. And because of that, it basically made him unplayable. The Warriors took him, Steve Kerr took him out of the rotation, basically, by the time they got to play the Lakers. He was nowhere to be found. So I think it was a tough break for him. I think it was not, first of all, to backtrack entirely, I think that video of Draymond punching Jordan Poole, that is not something that just gets smoothed over, like, so easily. I don't know if anyone's ever been in, like, a physical altercation. I don't know if anyone's ever been in a physical altercation with a friend or someone close to you. But when that happens, it's not, like, very easily fixed. You don't just, like, I understand there's, like, the whole stigma about men and how a lot of guys don't hold grudges, and it's like you just air it out, dap it up, and you're cool. You move past it. I happen to have a very unique set of friends where we can do stuff like that. You know, we could say some real shit to your face. I would never say anything behind any of my friends' backs. Everything I'd say, if they weren't in the room, I would say it directly to their face, and that has proven to be a key quality in all of the people that I hold close to me, is that we're real as shit, right? So, not to brag, humble brag, I guess, right? So, with Jordan Poole and Draymond, the fact that this dude, who is almost 10 years older than you, right? This is a veteran who's been around in the league. He is a champion. He has been with this team from the get-go. And you're like this young, and also Draymond, he's like waiting on this contract that he didn't get. But he's actually exactly 10 years older than Jordan Poole. Draymond's 33, 34, and Jordan Poole's 24. So Draymond's kind of waiting to see if the Warriors will give him a contract and that, or he'll just be a free agent. Jordan Poole just got a new contract. I don't know what was said, but clearly, I would imagine Jordan Poole said some bratty stuff to Draymond during practice, as it seems like they've gotten heated before. And Draymond took exception to it, and he let his temper get to him, and he threw that punch. But when something like that happens, it was not like a slap in the face. It was not like finger in the eye. It wasn't like a palm shove to the cheek or anything. It was like full-on extension, close fist punch to the jaw. Sucker punch. Also, Jordan Poole, even though Draymond approached Jordan Poole, I don't think Jordan Poole ever actually thought that Draymond was going to swing at him. Has this happened in the NBA before? Yeah, absolutely. Some stories we've heard before, others we have not. But this is not a thing that is brushed over easily when you're with someone a lot. These are guys that, after this happened, like, you have to spend months together. Months. And to think that in just the matter of, like, they said everything was cool by the start of the season, right? Like, in the matter of a month, for all that to be brushed under the rug, I don't buy that for a second. I think there were very clearly some lingering issues between Jordan Poole, Draymond Green, and the rest of the Warriors. Like, if I'm an outside perspective, or an outside watcher, right? If I'm one of these guys that was just like a bystander, and I see this happen, I am now constantly uneasy whenever Jordan Poole and Draymond Green are talking to each other. It automatically would make me uneasy. Like, is this going to boil over into something else? And Jordan Poole, to be completely honest with you, if I'm Jordan Poole, I would not. Draymond Green has the easier, because Draymond Green was the aggressor. Draymond Green is going to have a much easier time kind of sweeping this under the rug and forgetting about it. Jordan Poole is not. Jordan Poole, every time Draymond comes up and is yelling at you or screaming about something on the court, you're probably feeling uneasy. You're probably not in the most comfortable situation. And also, you know that deep down in your heart, you're the guy that's probably on the outside, because Steph Clay and a lot of maybe some of the other veterans that are on that team are going to like be in Draymond's corner with that. So now there's like this divisive kind of thing that's going on. Bottom line, I mean, that's a whole bunch of hypotheticals that I just threw out there. Obviously, there is a very real possibility that everything was cool and I'm just, you know, digging for scraps. But just as someone who's like, you know, if you've seen and been in, like, if you get into physical altercations with people that you know personally, like on a personal level, it can get weird after. It doesn't just go away overnight, you know? And it's, I think, bottom line, Jordan Poole just didn't probably feel right this entire season. And especially when he struggled, he probably didn't feel right. So a change of scenery for him is perfect. You're on now a Washington team with no stakes. Like, Jordan Poole, this is a blessing for him because he's won. He is a champion. He proved he was a key. Not only is he a champion, he was a key part of a championship team. Okay? He had a really great finals run with the Warriors last year. But now he's on a team that is clearly rebuilding. They have no aspirations. He can go out there and shoot 25 times a game, no problem, and we'll see how much he puts up. And you know what? No one's gonna win or lose. No one cares because the Wizards aren't playing for anything. So I think it is an absolutely perfect change of scenery for Jordan Poole. No, I don't think he's going to end his career a Wizard. He'll find, whether it's at the end of this contract or if he gets traded again at some point to a contender who wants a scorer either off the bench or to insert into their starting lineup, Jordan Poole is going to be a hot commodity. Hell, I wouldn't even be surprised if sometime this year he got traded. I really wouldn't. I think more in most likely scenario, by the longer or the closer this contract gets to being expiring, the higher in demand he's going to be for basketball teams that are contenders. So if I had to guess, next year or the year after is really when he's going to be at an all-time time, when he's like 25, 26. But right now, age 24, he in most likely scenario, he's going to stick this season out with the Wizards and just kind of like ball out and show people that he is a bucket and that he can be like a top one or two scorer on your team and try and contribute to winning basketball. Now, I don't think there's going to be much of a supporting cast around him, so they're not going to win many games, but he's going to be a bucket. He'll be a bucket this year. He's going to be a showcase. So like I said, I think that's a very important change of scenery for him. For the Warriors, I don't get it at all. I think that if you were going to dump off Jordan Poole's contract to someone, you probably could have found a better place to do it than Washington. You know, swinging CP3 from the Suns to Washington to get to you for Golden State, I don't see it. I don't see it. Jordan Poole, for all his struggles, again, I think this really just comes down to salary problems. But he is a scorer of the basketball. He's not going to be your number one ball handler. He's not going to be your primary playmaker, but he will be the guy who leads your second unit in scoring. That's like, he could start for a lot of teams, but with the Warriors specifically, his bread and butter was coming in with that second unit and lighting it on fire. Trading him for all his struggles, trading him for Chris Paul, who has shown basically nothing over the past year and a half, dating back to the playoffs last year. He was banged up this year. He was not particularly good in the regular season, and he was definitely not very good in the playoffs. He kind of got pushed around in the playoffs here. He's not the same defensive guy that he was early in his career, despite being a smaller guard in the league. He was a solid defender. He's not that anymore. He's old. He's not as quick. He could still hit that mid-range. He could still make the passes with the best of them. But to trade someone young and talented like Jordan Poole for an expiring contract in Chris Paul to just come off your bench for 20 minutes, that makes me think, like, well, what is the plan? To re-sign Draymond and then figure out the rest later? Like, are you comfortable losing Chris Paul for basically nothing? Like, you lost Jordan Poole for 1 year of Chris Paul and that's it? Like, who, unless you reallocate that money to like really important role players, then that's fine. But like, I just, if you ask me right now, are the Warriors better after this Jordan Poole trade? No, not at all. Not even close. Why would they be better post Jordan Poole? It's not it. It's not. But that doesn't really matter. You know, again, it's all about the money. And I think the Warriors are still going to be a playoff team if they stay healthy. But I don't know, dude. Chris Paul gets hurt. He's old. You're trading Jordan Poole in a couple seconds for 20 minutes of Chris Paul in the playoffs. If he stays healthy. I don't know. Contract dump or not, I think the Warriors could have found a better suitor than Chris Paul from the Wizards. I didn't really think that was the best thing they could have gotten. So the last contract dump that we've had so far, I don't think I'm missing anything, but John Collins. So John Collins got shipped off to the Memphis Grizzlies for Rudy Gay and a future second round pick. So this was quite literally a salary dump. The Hawks looked at their roster and said, someone's got to go, so let's get John Collins out of there because he's not that good. I even remember when the Hawks gave him that contract, I was like, Jesus Christ, John Collins is getting a max, bro. Like, what are we doing? So, sorry, no disrespect to John Collins, man, but he's just, I mean, it's not worth the money. And the Hawks realized that need that flexibility. So dumped him for Rudy Gay in a second. Nice addition for the Jazz, though. Nice. I do like that sneaky pickup for the Jazz, because the Jazz were scrappy last year. The Jazz were scrappy. So I kind of rock with that. Him and Lauri Markkanen in the front court. That's spicy. It's kind of spicy. All right. So the NBA draft. We'll go through the first round. I'll name all the picks, but I won't be talking about all the picks. Actually, I'm not even going to name all the picks. I'm just going to go through the picks that I like. So number one, obviously, Wembanyama to the Spurs. I can't say anything about this kid that's already been said. He's obviously a freak of nature. He's like 7'5". Ridiculous. Like he has this one highlight that I think is probably the craziest highlight I've ever seen from a dude as young as him, where he shoots a three and immediately starts following his shot. And by the time it missed, he jumped, rebounded it, and dunked. Like, he got a rebound put back off a three-point shot. It's just, it's really, really ridiculous, the kind of things he does. The only and biggest red flag that he has is if he's going to be able to hold up under an NBA schedule. He is young, he is skinny, and he is a freakish. He moves in a way that no person his size should be able to move. So the only logical reasoning is he's going to hurt himself. Like, that is the negative thoughts that should be creeping in front of everybody's mind. Obviously, I don't want him to be hurt. I'm not saying he's absolutely going to get hurt. He could play, you know, 82 games his rookie season. It's not uncommon. But we just saw Chet Holmgren, who was 7'2", had kind of freaky deaky handles and was a skinny twig. And he's like 7'1", 7'2". And he hurt his foot playing basketball just in the offseason at like one of those, circuits or whatever. So it's not an uncommon thing when guys who are that skinny, that slender, and are that tall and move that way, the injury factor is just higher. It is the way it is. No one's supposed to be moving like an NBA 2K player. It's not natural. So I really hope, I think San Antonio, they're going to treat him right. They're going to take care of him in the most careful way possible. I think they're going to monitor him very, very closely. And I think they're going to do a good job with him. So he is in the single best scenario I think he could be in. Because the Spurs are not good. They have a couple of nice players, but they're not that good. And they had the number one pick, so obviously they're not good. But just because they got Victor Wembanyama, this is not like suddenly, you know, oh, the Spurs are going to get right back into the playoffs and be in the hunt again. No, they have a long way to go with this roster. So they're going to take it slow. They're going to get him time to, you know, adjust to this NBA schedule. They're not going to overpush him. They're not going to, you know, I think they'll probably rest him even if he's not injured or anything like that. He'll have rest days, I think, built into the schedule. But yeah, franchise-altering pick, potentially, for San Antonio. Number two, the Hornets. They're foolish. They took Brandon Miller. Scoot Henderson, in my opinion, is the second best player in this draft. And Brandon Miller, to me, I'm so much lower on this kid than everybody else. I'm not putting him down. I do not care about the incident that happened at Alabama. I'm not even factoring that in at all, because I don't know who he is as a person. I don't know what I'm talking strictly basketball. He left a lot to be desired for me. Were there times that he absolutely popped off and he was the best player in the country? Yes. Were there times that I can't believe that this dude is about to go top five in the NBA draft when I was watching him? More times than I can count. I watched 5 games from Alabama this year, and every single one he took an absolute shit. He did not perform at all. I just, very hot and cold. That being said, at the end of the day, he is a prospect. He is an NBA prospect, and he is a guy that is, has a high potential. In this specific instance, the Hornets, I believe, were the ones that were drafting for fit and not best available. And when things like that happen, this is a bit of a hyperbole. I mean, it's a fact, what I'm about to say, but I'm not saying it's the same instance as right now, right? But when you draft for fit, you end up with Sam Bowie and Michael Jordan. Because the Blazers took Sam Bowie, who was a big man, because they didn't need a two guard in Michael Jordan because they had Clyde Drexler. That is when things like, or the Pistons. The Pistons didn't need a wing player because they had Tayshaun Prince. So they drafted Darko Milicic over Carmelo Anthony. Like, this is, those are the kind of things that are, obviously that is a nightmare scenario. That is an extreme where it's like, it's not always going to happen. Those are two of the most extreme cases where it's just really worked out for one franchise and was maybe one of the worst picks of all time for another. I'm not saying this is that. Obviously, you can't predict that until years down the line. Brandon Miller could be an all-NBA, perennial all-NBA all-star kind of guy. He has crazy potential like that. But I thought Scoot Henderson was a better prospect. But the Hornets took Brandon Miller. And that's because Scoot's a point guard and they have LaMelo Ball. So drafting for fit at number two, I don't think it was that big of a gap in terms of talent, but it is something that is needs to be like, I don't know. You have to be weary of making those decisions. Number three, the Blazers take Scoot Henderson with Damian Lillard on the roster. I hate it for Scoot. I feel bad for Scoot. He is talented. Damian Lillard is a superstar, all-NBA player. Yes, I know. But this is just not it if you're Portland. Damian Lillard cannot be on the opening day roster, man. He cannot be in that starting lineup the first game of the season. He can't. He needs to be traded. And the trade talks, they're spicing up a little bit. They're heating up a bit. But they need to crack down. Like, whoever is trying to get Damian Lillard away from Portland, someone's got to hit the gas. Damian Lillard, he needs to be pried away from the clutches of Portland. This franchise, I get Lillard has been loyal. He never asked for a trade. He never wanted to be traded, ride or die. I get it, but you are doing a disservice to your fans and the other players on that roster by keeping him there, because you are not a team that can realistically compete for a championship. You might, maybe, possibly with a full healthy season of Damian Lillard and everyone else, sneak into the low 7-8 seed through the play-in. Maybe. There are a lot of good teams in the West. The parity in the West last year was wild. Down to the last 2 weeks of the season, the 4-12 seed were only separated by like 2.5 games. So, crazy amount of parity. And I just don't think the Blazers are there. Like, the Mavericks missed the playoffs. If the Mavericks bring back Kyrie with Luka and then do maybe a couple other things during the offseason, are the Blazers better than the Mavericks? I don't think so. Not in my opinion. So I think it's just a disservice to the young talent that they are cultivating there with Simons and now Scoot's there. It would be, in my opinion, I'm going to go as far as to say this, it would be flat out malpractice for the Blazers to not flip Damian Lillard for solid role players or young prospect players and draft picks to someone, to a contender. It would be malpractice. You can easily get 3-4 first round picks for Damian Lillard and probably one or two solid role players. There's no reason to not trade this guy. You know, I think he could be as good as Damian Lillard is not like a fair expectation to put on this kid, but he is explosive. He has bounce. He is built. Like, you don't see a lot of guards, young guards, come into the league anymore. Usually they're very wiry, very athletic, very quick, very fast, but they're not very strong. Because in college, you're working on how to play in a system, how to raise your basketball IQ, how to perfect your mechanics, off-ball things, conditioning, yada, yada, yada. But you're not weightlifting to the extent where you're going to put on a significant amount of muscle in college, especially if you're a one-and-done. It's just not going to happen. The NBA is when guys come in and they start eating healthier, they start eating better, they start putting on muscle, they have a rigorous workout routine, and in the off season and then during the season as well. So it's a completely different beast. But Scoot Henderson already has an NBA guard body. He is shredded. He's got muscles on top of muscles. And he said he modeled his game after Russell Westbrook. And he gives Russell Westbrook, dude. He can shoot also. I mean, obviously, Russ can't really shoot very well anymore. But earlier in his career, he could. Scoot can shoot. He can get to the rim like nobody's business. He's got ups. He's strong. He's got great footwork. I think this kid is going to be really, really good. The Rockets drafted Amen Thompson, one of the two Thompson twins, Assur and Amen Thompson. Assur is a guard forward tweener. He's like 6'7", 200 pounds. And Amen Thompson is a point guard, but he's also 6'7", 200 pounds. So they're both huge and they're both tweener guard kind of guys. Back-to-back picks from Houston and Detroit. Detroit got screwed. Obviously, they only won like 17 games, got the fifth overall pick. But you landed on still a very good player. And they have a big backcourt. They got Ivy, Cade Cunningham's coming back. And now Assur Thompson is going to be on the Pistons. So they have three big guards. I'm kind of interested to see how the Pistons rock this year. They're going to be kind of fun to watch, I think, if they handle it properly. And especially now, who's their head coach? Monty Williams. You got Monty in there. So, if you're a Detroit Pistons fan, you got to have the most excitement heading into a season than you've had in the past, 5 to 7 years. Amen Thompson joins the Rockets. Good pick for the Rockets. I think the only pick for the Rockets that they could have made. Unfortunate for my guy, Kevin Porter Jr. Kevin Porter Jr. is my guy he's on the outs now. Because not only, I'm going to bring it up here instead of later, but not only did the Rockets take Amen Thompson, they also took Cam Whitmore, who slid in this draft from Villanova. I was just talking about Scoot Henderson and how he has an NBA body. Cam Whitmore has an NBA body. This dude is massive. He was a total bully at Villanova. Really, really big, strong 6'7" wing player. So now you're looking at Houston where it's like Amen Thompson, Jalen Green, Cam Whitmore, Alperen Sengun, and then I don't even know who's going to be their center or whatever, but Jabari Smith Jr., Dodoy. He's not going to be their center, but like you can run a lineup like that out there. Kevin Porter Jr. seems like he might be on the outs. I would love to see him go somewhere else. I don't think Kevin Porter Jr. really fits where they're going in there with Houston. Houston is a young team. They have all this drafted talent that they have. Josh Christopher also. I still really like Josh Christopher, and he showed some improvement coming off the bench this year. His three-point shooting, I think, is still just egregious, so he's not going to last very long as a guard who can't shoot in the league. Needs to pick that up. But he shoots like 75% from the line. So I think it's just mechanics he's got to fix. But drafted talent in Houston. They got drafted talent there. And Kevin Porter Jr. is not a guy they drafted. So that makes me think automatically, like, maybe you ship him out for just some extra. And also, he's young. You know, he's not a guy that's just going to be like, yeah, I'll relegate myself as a role player and be done with it. I think he could fit really in really nicely now that, you know, they get a real point guard like Amen Thompson. They had Kevin Porter Jr. running the point basically all year, and he's not a point guard. He's a two guard. And yeah, he did pretty well, all things considered, but it's not his natural, playmaking's not his naturally given strength. It's scoring the basketball. And he shot like 45% on spot up threes this year, but he only took like 1.5 a game, 2 a game. So that volume needs to go way up. And if you have an actual playmaking ball handler, a natural point guard on your team to make that happen, then it's going to help guys like Kevin Porter Jr. I'm not sure how the Rockets really view him with this core that they got set up. I would love for him to be a Knick, though. I would love for him to be a New York Knick. Pistons took Ausar Thompson. The Magic drafted Anthony Black from Arkansas, and then they drafted Jet Howard from Michigan. Two lackluster picks. I don't know. Anthony Black, sure, at 6. Okay. Jet Howard at 11 felt weird. The Pacers took Bilal Coulibaly. I don't even know. The Metropolitan 92. He's the same team as Victor Wembanyama. They traded him to the Wizards. And the Wizards took Jairus Walker from Houston. They traded him to the Pacers. Let's see here. The Raptors taking Grady Dick at 13. I love that pick for them. Jordan Hawkins was taken by the Pelicans at 14. I also love that pick for them. Jordan Hawkins, elite three-point shooter at UConn. I think he's going to fit in really nicely with that roster. Let's see. Jaime Jaquez Jr. from UCLA. I think he exudes Heat culture. Like, I just think he, under Eric Spoelstra, feels like destiny almost. So I love that pick for them. I mentioned Cam Whitmore. The Rockets stole him at 20. Derek Whitehead from Duke by the Nets at 22. I really like as well. Nick Smith Jr., who was, I think at one point, was rated number one overall on, like, Max Preps or ESPN, whatever, for his high school recruiting class. 27th overall to the Hornets. So I think the Hornets, with Nick Smith Jr. and Brandon Miller, I think that's a great draft for them. I really like what the Rockets did this draft. The Jazz taking Bryce Sensabaugh. Also like it. Bryce Sensabaugh was a great scorer. Any notable second round picks that would pop up at me? Oh, the Hornets. Again, Brandon Miller, Nick Smith Jr. took Amari Bailey too from UCLA. So Amari Bailey going 41st overall to the Hornets. Wow, Imani Bates, who went to Eastern Michigan, was a number one overall recruit, went to Memphis, injured and also suspended. I think it just didn't pan out there. He goes to Eastern Michigan, declares for the draft, and he gets taken by the Cavaliers, 49th overall. That could prove to be a value pick as well. Isaiah Wong, who was a key part of that Miami team that made a deep run in the NCAA tournament. He was taken 55th overall by the Pacers. And just because, shout out to Chris Livingston from Kentucky, Mr. Irrelevant, the 58th overall pick in the NBA draft. So I think all in all, I like what the Rockets did, and I really like my Knicks, of course, didn't get the first overall pick because the Mavericks decided to get the 10th pick. If it was outside the top 10, it went to the Knicks. So no pick for the Knicks. That's all right. But overall, I like what the Rockets did, and I think the Hornets have tremendous upside with this young talent that they have. These guys just got to be committed to playing defense. That's all you really need. Brandon Miller said his go to basketball is Paul George. It's kind of like a weird phrasing, but basically his favorite player is Paul George. That's what he was saying. He has the same archetype type of build to be a Paul George caliber player. He can be that kind of guy. So I really want to see him develop into that kind of basketball player. Nick Smith Jr. is a scorer. He can put it up. They have plenty of scorers. They still have Terry Rozier. They still have LaMelo. I just hope a lot of these guys are able to spread the wealth and just be efficient shooters of the basketball, and the Hornets will win a decent amount of games if that happens. They need to be able to play both ways. Like, all of these guys exude, like, scoring. I think Amari Bailey is a sleeper. He's going to work harder than all of them just because he was also a top recruit out of high school, and it just didn't really work out for him in UCLA where, I mean, it worked out for him. He was a good player, but just didn't get the same type of, you know, draft recognition. So he's going to have a lot. He's going to have a lot to prove with a chip on his shoulder. I think they had a very high value draft, the Hornets. Now, of course, it's the Hornets and things generally don't work out favorably for them as a franchise. But Jordan did sell his majority stake in the team. So maybe things will change. Who knows? I'm going to be interested in watching them for sure. They're a team I'm going to be tapped into this upcoming season. And my Spurs, of course. I don't know if anyone remembers when I was a huge Spurs fan. I don't think I... Probably not, because 2018, I think by then, Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan were like kind of Dunyans. So, but oh my God. Growing up, and like even up to, you know, 2015, 2016, the Spurs were my team, bro. I loved watching San Antonio Spurs basketball. Obviously, they were really bad. Now, I do like Keldon Johnson. He's like my guy. I bet on him a lot last year. Anyway, that's the NBA draft. That's the rundown. I'm sure there'll be a lot of more salary dump trades going on. But we are rapidly approaching July. It will be July by the time the next episode comes out. Next week's episode. So rapidly approaching July, which means more football, which means Saquon Barkley needs to get his contract with the Giants. We'll be tapped into all that, tuning into all that. The Yankees and Mets, the Mets are just floundering. Maybe the most embarrassing loss they've had in the past couple years happened the other day. Really tough to see. Yeah, that's not good either. That's like, and the All-Star game's coming up for the MLB. So halfway point, well, more than halfway point, but there is, I don't know if the Mets are going to, they're not going to sell. They've invested too much in this team to sell. They're not going to be sellers. They got to figure it out. They're going to have to figure it out. And so are the Yankees. The Yankees, not bad record-wise, but just, I hope things kind of turn a new leaf. Judge needs to get back as soon as possible. But now apparently I think the ligament in his toe is not even sprained. It's torn, which is not great. And then Carlos Rodon still just hasn't pitched. So if those guys two guys come back in a timely manner, good things on the horizon, I think. But that'll end it for this episode of From My Point of View. Thank you all very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. And have a great weekend. I'll talk to you all next week. Every album got no skipping. Shot it bad, ain't had no chicken. Suburban, her toe pretty.